This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by two new sponsors, the award-winning Orofino Vineyards. Check out their Passion Pit wines and Orofino Vineyard Suites, voted best in the Similkameen Valley. And the Similkameen Valley's new Row 14 restaurant at Clippers, not just raising the bar in cost and cuisine, it's defining it. It's also the home of Untangled Cidery and Clippers Guest Suites. You can find them online at row14.ca and orofinovineyards.com. Welcome aboard. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. Almost through February, heading for the spring releases. It's all good, friends. Bud break. Everything's up ahead of us. Everything is directly in front of us. All we have to do is hang in, stay upright, and keep breathing. Now, the Vancouver International Wine Festival is upon us. It is the usual cacophony of noise and conversation and hugs and wine and food and friendship. But I thought I'd take this opportunity to go back. We've been attending for some 12 years now. I thought I'd go back and just take memorable conversations that I've had in the round table, in the tasting room, and just invite my friends, people you're comfortable with, to sit around and talk about wine. Here are the guests for this show. We start in 2017 with Harry Hershick, the executive director of the Vancouver Wine Fest, and Chris Gaze, the founding director, the artistic director of the Bard on the Beach. That was 2017. From 2016, when Italy was the feature region, Curtis Colt, DJ Kearney, Dana Van Bolligan, Reese Pender. From 2010, an interview I did with my recorder at the time, which was handheld, Anthony von Mandel, introduced me to Marchese Piero Antonori from the Antonori Estate. And it was, I had no idea this was going to drop into my lap. So it's kind of interesting to hear their conversation from 2010. From 2017, DJ Kearney, the late Harry McWaters, Ray Signorello, who had just lost his Napa winery building to the fires of that year. Ann Sperling from 2017, Dana Van Mulligan, Howard Soon, who was still at Sandhill Winery and about to get an Order of Canada. Our friend Sandra Oldfield is included twice, once while she was at Tinhorn Creek and once when she was definitely not at Tinhorn Creek. John Bonnet, the keynote speaker from 2019. And Charles Smith from Walla Walla. This is before he became Charles Smith! Gina Gallo, family member and leader of the Gallo family, and her husband, John Charles Boissette, winemaker, Raymond, Buena Vista, all of that, royalty in the house. Please enjoy this archive edition of Tasting Room Radio. All right, I've officially kicked off the show with Christopher Gage, the founding artistic director of Bard on the Beach for 27 years, and Harry Hershick, the executive director of the 38th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. What year did you join?
My first day working for the wine festival happened to be 9/11.
Ah.
So I remember that day very clearly. But actually, I've been to every wine festival since 1987, when it was at the Hyatt Hotel.
And I've asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you again. What do you remember about that first year?
What struck me the most was seeing a winery from Lebanon called Chateau Mussar.
Wow.
And I started to realize how big and exciting and unexpected the wine world really is. But we're looking forward to seeing some Mediterranean wineries in the future.
That guy always from Golan Heights shows up.
And I'm thinking, well, Israel was in the festival for a few years in a row.
I mean, how dedicated do you have to be to work land in the Golan Heights?
Yeah, well, fortunately, the wineries are a little higher up in the hills, cooler climate. So they're a little out of the way of the fire.
I don't think rockets can tell what the altitude is. They just go where they're sent. Christopher Gage, wine has been a part of humanity many thousands of years, perhaps. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But where does it show up in your world?
Well, Shakespeare picks up on it all the time. And it's generally for fun things. But I always love the one from Twelfth Night. Do you think, because you are virtuous, there shall be no more cakes and ale? And I love that quote. I often would say that. Shall there be no more cakes and ale? It seems like it's sort of an end of an era quote. Another one from Twelfth Night, Sir Andrew Aguecheek. I'm a great eater of beef, and I believe that does harm to my wit. I don't know if it does harm to your wit.
It doesn't.
Yeah. And so it goes, good wine is a good familiar creature if it be well used, is a good one from Othello. Yep.
Harry Hirschick, please explain the reason why Christopher Gage and Bard on the Beach are part of the Vancouver Wine Festival.
Well, the Wine Festival and the Playhouse has had a long, long relationship with Bard on the Beach. The Wine Festival was born out of the Playhouse. It was initiated by a Playhouse board member, John Levine. The first Wine Festival was on February 20th, 1979. So we have a long history of supporting the performing arts, being part of a theater company, working with theater. So it was a natural transition to choose a new theater charity that had a long relationship with the Playhouse. And now this is our fourth year with Bard on the Beach.
And you're a numbers guy. So off the top of your head, Harry, how much money have we raised for Bard on the Beach in 4 years, do you think?
About 450,000 and 8.5 million overall since 1979.
And not for profits like the Wine Festival and Bard on the Beach. Mm-hmm. There's no one, I think, on the planet who spends money more wisely than a not for profit because we know the value of a dollar and we earn it.
Exactly. Christopher Gage, the founding artistic director for 27 years now of Bard on the Beach, and Harry Hirschick, the executive director of the Vancouver National Wine Festival, year 38. To quote young Barney Bentall, it's like a goat rodeo. That's what it is. It's hairy, and it gets hairier as the day goes on. So we try to get in there and get out before it gets, because there's such a buzz in that room.
Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. Hour two of our coverage of the 38th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, and I have my friends around the table. The wine diva, Dana Van Mulligan. She's writing for Vines Magazine and many others, but she is the wine diva, winediva.ca, Dana. DJ Kearney is on my left. She's a wine educator, and as Curtis Colt said, she's DJ freaking Kearney. That's who she is.
He wasn't quite so polite.
That's who she is. Hi, Deej.
Hi, baby.
Curtis Colt, the Georgia Strait. He is a columnist there. He's a wine expert. And Reese Pender, Little Farm, that's his place in Coston, the Similkameen Valley, and Dana Van Mulligan. What did you taste since I last saw you?
Well, it hasn't been that long, but I stayed true to what I said earlier as I was going looking for whites specifically. I love Italian whites. I'm a huge fan, and I think they don't get nearly the attention they deserve. And I've kind of peppered it in with a little Prosecco in between and some Lambrusco.
So I brought that bottle because somebody handed it to me.
That would be from, yes, Cantina Braganzi, a Vespaiolo.
Has anybody tasted? Anybody done any?
Oh, yes.
Well, Deej, what'd you do?
Well, I went straight to BB Grapes. This is an amazing winery close to Florence, and they make a range of reds, and Dana mentioned whites, and I agree. They're unsung heroes of Italy, and I had the most amazing blend of Vermentino.
Sauvignon Blanc, I believe, was in it as well. Yeah,
and it's really, really spectacular wine.
Well, I want to echo the sentiments for Italian white. Yes, we love the reds, but you know, if I'm in the Similkameen Valley hanging out at Reese's house in his hammock in the summer, I don't want to have an Amarone. I want
while
a white.
While I'm working hard.
Yes, I want the Vietti Royal Arnais, crisp, flinty, lemony, zesty, 2014 vintage flinty citrusy Arnais grape, which is so lively, just like this room.
Master of wine, Reese Pender.
A lot of these wines didn't exist 10 or 15 years ago. So you look at Italy as this great old country, but it's actually so much changing so fast that it's one of the most exciting places for new things.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a weekly celebration of food, wine, and life with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Hour two of our coverage of the 38th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, and I have my friends around the table. The wine diva, Dana Van Mulligan. DJ Kearney is on my left. She's a wine educator. That's who she is. Hi, Deej.
Hi.
Curtis Colt, the Georgia Strait. And Reese Pender, Little Farm. That's his place in Coston, the Similkameen Valley. And Dana Van Mulligan. Can we talk about BC wine for a sec?
Sure. I got one in my glass.
Oh, what do you got?
I have biodynamic Grüner Veltliner from Summer Hill.
Have anybody tried BC wines in the room? Anyone?
No, but I have in the past. I have had many BC wines in the past. You know, that's the thing. When you come to a big event like this, it's very tempting to go and hit your favorites. And so you actually have to work some different muscles here and try things that you haven't had the opportunity to try before. Otherwise, you know, what's this whole exercise for?
I'll throw this open. What are we looking for 2016, here in British Columbia, here in Vancouver specifically, from our wines? What are we looking for? What's leading the trend? What's leading the gotta-haves?
I think lighter, fresher, higher, vibrant, acidity, freshness. Throw away those new oak barrels, or, you know, people are looking for these lighter, fresher, juicier, drinkable wines where you can polish off a bottle or more and not have to have a lie down between glasses. And we can do it so naturally in BC. We have all the elements. When the style that a region naturally produces, it aligns with what consumers want, it's the perfect match, right? And that's what's starting to happen. Consumers are looking for lighter and fresher, and that's what we can naturally do. So we have to stop pretending and make these other styles and go to what naturally happens for us.
Reese Bender, Dana?
Just making it fresh, pristine, showing the wine itself, not just that residual sugar in the wines.
Again. The very reason why I sit here and do this is because I get to talk to you guys around a table. This is fantastic.
Can I say one more thing? People should drink Lambrusco.
Okay.
And eat salami and drink old Hunter Semillon, because that's what I want to do right now. Those
bingo.
Two things.
Bingo. Yeah.
That's what
Hunter
I'm doing. About sums
ding,
it up.
Ding, ding.
DJ Kearney, Curtis Culp, Reese Bender, Dana Van Mulligan. How lucky am I?
This is Tasting Room Radio.
It is Anthony Von Mandel from Mission Hill Family Estate, and it's a huge, huge pleasure and treat to introduce the gentleman who has really been the pioneer and the champion of a rebirth revolution of Italian wines over 40 years, the Marchese Piero Antonori.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
The last time Italy was the featured country was 2000, if I'm not mistaken. How much has your industry changed in those 8 years? What changes have you seen?
Well, I think that the big changes happened before that. I mean, we started at the beginning of the 1970 to completely rethink the wine industry in Italy. And then since then, there have been an evolution. And I think in the last 7-8 years, we have, in a certain sense, completed this evolution, which sometimes I call revolution, because it has been such a big change.
It's like turning a ship tanker around. It takes miles to turn. It took a long time, a lot of tradition, right?
Absolutely, yes. The problem in Italy has been that for centuries, the wine industry and wine producers in Italy were oriented to quantity rather than quality. And then at a certain point we realized that we had the opportunity, the potential, the condition to produce fine wines. And since then we have, you know, devoted ourselves with passion to try to go from quantity to quality.
Did Italians appreciate it? I mean,
absolutely.
We did.
Absolutely, even in Italy, because, you know, lifestyle has changed in the last 30 or 40 years. And now people in Italy are looking much more for quality rather than quantity. And they are prepared to spend more money, provided they can get a quality product.
So, does that sound like us? Didn't we do a mini version of that?
That's the same thing, and it's the only way to sustain wines in the world, because it's really this quest and search for things that are specific to a region. So, for instance, what the Marchese did in Tuscany, which is a complete transition in 30 years from wines in straw bottles to 100-point Parker wines in really a very, very short time, and boldly saying when at a certain time that we need to go outside the rules, and we need to relook at how, what grapes we use, how they're used, how our fermentation, every aspect. And really, I think that's where Antonori, and particularly the Marchese, has been the pioneer. After how many generations now?
Well, now 27.
Generations.
So my daughters represent the 27th generation in the family.
You were always going to be in wine.
Well,
you could have been a great lawyer.
This is why our ambition. We try to create the foundation in order to be able you know, to continue for many generations in the future.
Is it fair to say that we really, truly can never totally appreciate Italian wines until we go there and see where they're grown?
I think that to a certain extent this is absolutely right, because a wine is not just the quality of the wine which is in the bottle, but it's all the word which is behind the bottle, which is, you know, the beauty of nature, the history, the arts, the gastronomy. All that is part of the culture and the foundation of a wine. So I think it's important to go where the wine is produced, meet with the wine producers, understand what they, the vision they have. That's very important, I think.
Last question. Do you like what Anthony is doing in British Columbia? Do you like Mission Hill and his whole concept, his passion for wine?
I think it's an extraordinary achievement in a region which has certainly potential, but Anthony had the vision to understand what the potential was and to implement it and to build something from scratch, something which we admire a lot.
Thank you for the invite. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Terry David.
Thank you, Anthony. Congratulations.
Everything you're doing.
On your Bambino.
Well, that's the greatest all. We're starting on our second generation, but we have a few to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The year was 2010. That was Anthony von Mandel, myself, and Marchesa Piero Antonori at the 2010 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Right, we're going to hit the archives again. For segment two, DJ Kearney from 2017 and the late Harry McWaters from Time, McWaters and Evolve, and a co-founder of Wine in Canada, frankly, from 2017. And Ray Signorello lives in West Vancouver and Napa. This was after losing his Napa winery and other buildings and some of his wine to the fires of 2018 in Napa. The Vancouver Wine Festival archive special. We'll be back right after this. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by two new sponsors, the award-winning Orofino Vineyards. Check out their Passion Pit wines and Orofino Vineyard Suites, voted best in the Similkameen Valley. And the Similkameen Valley's new Row 14 restaurant at Clippers, not just raising the bar in cost and cuisine, it's defining it. It's also the home of Untangled Cidery and Clippers Guest Suites. You can find them online at row14.ca and orofinovineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. It's going to be an amazing 2020 at The Hatch. A new location for Crown and Thieves will open in the summer, The Hatching Post Microbrewery, and Black Swift Vineyards in the spring. So what is Black Swift Vineyards? Single vineyards, small lots of Riesling, Chardonnay, Pinot, and Syrah. It's like The Hatch wearing a tuxedo. There'll be a tasting room and a patio. And it'll be the home of both Black Swift and Screaming Frenzy. All the details might be found at thehatchwines.com. Welcome back. This is hour one of Tasting Room Radio at the Vancouver International Wine Festival 2017. The feature region is Canada. I guess we've made that plain. DJ Kearney, I've asked her to stay with me because she's good. She's a wine educator. She's very good. And Harry McWaters, who is the president and CEO of Time.
And how about Canadian wine aristocracy?
Yes,
how royalty. About blue blood? And we have that wine blue blood at this festival. There's Harry is here, of course, who is really the center of the industry. We have got Don Triggs. We have got Donald Zeraldo. We have Charlie Pilateri.
Terry.
We just have some of the most important people here who started our industry and have championed it all the way to this point.
Well spoken. By the way, Harry, is this your 50th year?
This is my 39th year at this festival.
I understand.
It's only been going there.
I understand that.
This is my 50th vintage coming up.
There you go.
People say the math doesn't work, but it actually does, because I started in 68, endured vintage of 68. It's a lot going to be a lot different in 2017.
I've asked you this before, but just for the audience, the new members of the audience,
What was the first year like? What do you remember about it?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you about the consumer, that we had two distinctively different groups of consumers, those that took it out of the brown paper bag and those that didn't. So, you know, the reality is, the myth is, there weren't good wines in those times, and that's not necessarily so. I can tell you that the best wines that we made were the toughest to sell because people were not wine drinkers. If they were, they wanted it high in alcohol.
Yeah.
They wanted it sweet and red. The one thing that was the same then, it is now, and I'm pretty confident will be 50 years from now, is this is an industry that must be consumer driven.
Yeah.
And we need to just stay a couple steps ahead of the consumer and try and lead them a little bit, but you know, they catch up pretty damn quick.
You know, this sometimes gets overlooked by me, and that is those tasting rooms. You're opening up at the Panmar. You're going to have a great tasting facility in downtown Penticton. Bless you. But those tasting rooms aren't just tasting rooms. They're not just commerce where wine is exchanged. You listen to what's being said.
They're education centers.
They are, and they tell you when you've hit the button. Mm-hmm. Right? They tell you when you're onto something, and you take notice of that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What are you pouring this year?
Red and white wines. There's going to be a focus on Meritage. That's near to my heart. So
sure.
We're pouring both red and white Meritage. For the trade today, we're actually pouring a wine that we're releasing at the winery at opening. That's called Kronos. It's a big red. We only produce 100 cases of it, but it's one I'm really pleased with.
How big? Iconic big?
Yeah. You got to hit the bottom of the bottle to get it out. Our focus will continue to be Meritage and our Chardonnay.
And the Syrah, I just want to put in a little plug for the Thyme Syrah because I love it so much. It's such a special expression of Syrah in BC, and it's near and dear to my heart.
Thank
I know
you.
It's not here, but everybody should go and buy a bottle and taste it.
What we are doing, that with the new winery, we have just bottled 100% Syrah Rosé.
Oh,
wow.
Delicious.
I'll be first in line.
I really, really like it.
Yeah. Such a great grape for rosé.
Harry McWaters, let's get from you and from DJ Kearney. Let's get an overview on Canadian wines.
It's great that we can see wines that are produced coast to coast. I recently judged at the Canadian Culinary Championships 2 weeks ago in Kelowna, and I can tell you the wines we got down to the last three wines.
Mm.
One was from the West Coast, being Vancouver Island, and one was from Nova Scotia.
Mm.
Pretty remarkable.
Pretty fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fantastic when you think about it.
Well, you know, there's so many different styles, both in Ontario and British Columbia, that
sure.
There are some that come a little closer in style, given that we're still such a long, long ways apart. People want to compare the Okanagan Valley and Niagara, and I think that's so unfair that there are very few wine regions in any country that are as far apart as those two regions are. And, you know, when you think we're 500 miles farther north than the Niagara Peninsula and the Okanagan Valley, that we spend more money on irrigation than they spend on drainage.
Yeah.
So the growing conditions are way, way different. That as far as the moisture, as far as soil composition, climatic conditions. So it's just unfair. People don't ever want to compare Burgundy and Bordeaux, and you can drive there in a day. I'll tell you how I feel. British Columbia grows the best British Columbia wine in the world, and Ontario grows the best Ontario wine.
Please don't yell at me. Please don't.
Such a diplomat.
How about that?
I would like people to try some Syrah from Ontario. Colio Estate Wines has a little Syrah called the Bricklayer's Cache. And there's also some Aligoté, the other great white grape of Burgundy, at Chateau des Charmes, along with a really, really smooth Gamay.
I love Gamay.
Me too.
You know that.
Me too.
You mentioned the Colio one. That the winemaker there that made that wine is a very, very competent winemaker. And I'm pleased to say he actually works for me now.
Fantastic.
Oh, Harry.
Harry McWaters, congratulations on year 50.
Yes.
DJ Kearney, thank you for everything that you do and for saving my butt here as well.
I'm always here for you, TDM.
This is Tasting Room Radio.
I have at the table Ray Signorello, the proprietor of Signorello Estates on Silverado Trail, Napa Valley. You have a lot of friends here, and I know there's people in the audience would like to know what's left of the winery, and have you started regrowing already?
Well, I'm sure most of you have heard about the fires of California, Northern California, early October, and we unfortunately got hit pretty hard right at the beginning. But Sunday was a Sunday night, about 9:50, the fire started, and it was what we call the kind of the perfect storm for fires in that it was 50 mile an hour winds, 10% humidity, and we had one of the wettest springs in history in Napa Valley in Northern California, and that created a lot of growth that turned into very dry, almost hay-like stuff in early October. So all that kind of came together on that one day, and they call them red flag warning days. I got the notice about 3 p.m. I was actually, oddly enough, I was sitting in Vancouver. I was asleep.
Oh, man.
My wife, who had never been to the winery without me, was there that one weekend. Her first time ever being there with her girlfriends. And I got a call that night from her about 10:45. And she was frantic, saying there was a massive fire on the ridgeline behind us. And I was asleep. I woke up to, well, I don't think it's that big a deal. We've had fires before. You know, it looks, at night, everything looks kind of, you know, fires look bigger than they are. Well, obviously, it was a big deal. And she grabbed a few things out of the building, ran out the door. We have a residence there, or we did. And I phoned my winemaker, who brought our vineyard team up there to fight the fires for the first kind of like half hour to an hour. And we didn't have the equipment. We had a lot of water, but not the equipment to match it. So within about an hour, we had lost my residence, our offices, our lab, our hospitality center, up in smoke. I mean, the silver lining in all this is on our property, we have 30 to 40-year-old vines, and they're all intact. So we have the vines,
okay,
and we have the barrels of wine. So we actually have the product, just not the building. What you saw first, in October and into November was a lot of press, which kind of showed the area as being like a bombed out zone, devastated. And that really wasn't the case. So there's a few wineries like us, very few that got hit hard. But most of what Napa is open for business. I mean, it's 99.9%.
Okay. And that's important for everybody to understand that, the hills are green again, spring is here. You know, it doesn't look as bad as some of the pictures. And to support the North Coast, Napa and Sonoma, where everybody's still alive and still making wine. And
you know, luckily we actually had some facilities on the property that made it through. So our crush pad and our barrel cellar made it through. So we didn't lose any product, and we're able to continue on the production side. We can't obviously host anybody there, and I moved all my team off-site. But essentially, the production continues. So
Okay. Sandra Ofield.
You know, I just had one little quick thing to say about the fires, actually, real quick. I think the consumers are going to have to, they're going to have to start getting used to the fact that these things are going to be happening in our areas, and they're going to have to become not painting it with such a broad stroke. You know, BC's had a fire, avoid BC, that's not going to work anymore. And Sonoma County's had a fire, avoid Sonoma County.
How about they could use your support?
I think they need to get informed on where the fires were at and where they're heading to, and make informed decisions, and that's what we're heading towards. So,
and the other thing that's important is that anybody worth their weight in wine and quality is not going to put a smoky wine
exactly.
in a bottle.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Don't worry about the press. Go with your heart.
Okay, Eugene.
For you, do I have a gig in broadcasting someday? Do you think?
Oh, as a matter of fact, you just started your gig. Randy Ullum from Jackson Family Wines, Ray Signorello from his own winery. And by the way, I was going to introduce Sandra by saying she is my co-host for the show and the host of Oldfield's Wanderings. But also, when asked what she's going to do next, said, I'll tell you three things I'm not going to do. I am not going to go into retirement. I am not going to own another winery. And I am damn sure not going into politics. And we'll leave it at that.
She's the wine ambassador of BC.
She should
Bravo.
Be running a damn
Bravo.
Place, frankly. Thank you for doing
Thank
this. I appreciate
you.
It. This
Thank
has been
you.
Tasting Room Radio, the
Cheers.
40th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. It's going to be an amazing 2020 at The Hatch. A new location for Crown and Thieves will open in the summer. The Hatching Post Microbrewery. And Black Swift Vineyards in the spring. So what is Black Swift Vineyards? Single vineyards. Small lots of Riesling, Chardonnay, Pinot, and Syrah. It's like The Hatch wearing a tuxedo. There'll be a tasting room and a patio. And it'll be the home of both Black Swift and Screaming Frenzy. All the details might be found at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Believe it or not, if you go to the Road 13 website, they already have listed their events for 2020. The dinners with Backyard Farm, the Bubbles and Crepes, Cheesy Weekend, Crab Boil, the Bubbles and Barbecue, the Harvest Barbecue, and the days that the Wienery truck shows up. It's all there. Make your plans at road13vineyards.com.
Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is the 2017 Vancouver International Wine Festival Tasting Room Radio. We've been waiting a year for this moment because Canada is the feature region, and we just, there's not enough room in the tasting room to get everybody in, but it's happening right now. And we're starting I'll give you the lineup in just a second because it's long and it's wonderful. Dana Van Mulligan, the Wine Diva, is beside me. Opposite me is Howard Soon from Sandhill. Right beside Howard is Sandra Ofield from Tinhorn Creek. Off to my right there is Ann Sperling from Sperling Vineyards. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Terry.
Good to see you.
Thank you all. How big a deal was it when you heard that Canada was a feature region? What was your reaction, Anne?
Oh, it was exciting. It was a great time to showcase all of our wines together.
Howard, first man to win a gold medal at the Chard du Monde, Founders Award, a lot of firsts for you. There was a time when if we had done this, well, it's actually been done twice before.
Right.
We wouldn't have had this gathering. What does it represent to you?
I think it's kind of like a coming of age of our industry because people are going to still come here and say, gee, I didn't know Canadian wine was that good. We're still going to hear that. I mean, I've been in it 37 years, Terry, and we're still going to have people that are just finding out that British Columbia wine and Ontario wine is actually really good. And Nova Scotia, which is another great topic to be introduced to and to understand.
Hmm.
Really good.
What else you got? What else are you pouring?
Well, the other cool one is Viognier again, Small Lots Viognier. And that's from Robert Goltz, the guy I've known for about 25, 30 years.
Sure.
Great guy.
Does he still go into the field with no shoes on?
Yes.
We still haven't bought him any pair of shoes.
Wow.
he's still got the same set of runners that he wears just for visitors. Takes them out of the box.
Yeah, they're formal.
Formal wear.
Did you get to the end of your list?
Well, we at the BC Wine Institute regional table, we're pouring a Sandhill Small Lots 2. That's pretty good for a pour that's $35, right?
By the way, I have a 2004 3.
Yes.
Is it ready now?
Excellent. Drink it now.
Okay.
You know why?
Why?
You go out and buy some more.
Denver, what are you pouring?
We're pouring our white blend, 2-bench white, and we're pouring our Meritage blend, our 2-bench red, and we're pouring a Syrah, and we're pouring a 4-year-old aged Pinot Noir.
Nice.
Yeah, and under the table, we're pouring some orange wine made from Kerner.
Is orange your future?
No, it was an experiment. It's a 2-year aged orange wine, skin fermented with using the Kerner grape before we took that block out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Dana Van Mulligan, the Wine Diva, is with me. Actually, I know that you and Chris Waters are going to sit down in the second hour. And you actually, because you judge, you get to taste on a level that very few people get to taste. You get to taste everything from across the country.
Yeah, and you know we have our very consistent wines that come in year after year. We get some of the top wineries in Canada, of course, have been right here in British Columbia as well as Ontario. But it's nice to see that kind of combination, people coming together and talking from both sides of the country and tasting the wines from each other's vineyards.
Sandra, are your wines showing up across the country?
No, not really, actually. We're still mainly in BC and Alberta. But one thing I was going to say about what Dana just said with exposure to Ontario wines, I mean, as you know, you and I have been involved pretty heavily with trying to open up our provincial borders. And our province is open. And so the people that come to this tasting that taste a good Ontario wine that they want to get, they can just ask that winery to ship it to them, and it's legal. And they should be taking advantage of that at this show because going from Ontario to BC is legal, and they can order up a case of Riesling if they want and have it delivered to their door.
I believe it was you who actually said you could ship a shotgun.
Yeah, I still have the shotgun. Yeah.
Easier than you could.
My
wine.
Daughter's dating now, and it's coming in really handy.
That's great. That's great. That's what it was.
No kidding.
Three of the very best, and Dana Van Mulligan, the Wine Diva, who I'm going to ask to stick for the next group because we're going to need some crowd control.
A crowd control with Curtis Colt in the room, definitely.
That's right. Okay. All right, this is the 2017 Vancouver International Wine Festival.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a weekly celebration of food, wine, and life with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
This is the 41st annual
Vancouver International Wine Festival, and we wanted to start with the keynote speaker, Jean Benet. Share, for those of us who weren't in the room, the high note of your speech that you talked
to me. All the lessons from California?
Yeah.
yeah, you know, make good wine, obviously. No, so a lot of it was based on my first book, which was The New California Wine. Where I started was because we were, to some extent, talking about California and how that reflects on BC wine and Canadian wine, and obviously the very fast and very good growth here, but sort of looking in the future and figuring out how to keep that going. And then from there, sort of was talking about the rate of change, which is very fast. And right before that, when we were having our discussion about the symposium panel, we were talking about the Okanagan style, for instance, what, say, Okanagan can specifically bring to the market, and the idea that there's freshness, there's the ability to get good acidity without having to work the wine in the winery and acidify any of that. So that's really fortunate, because that's now what the market increasingly wants globally. What I was saying is, when all the quote, you know, the new style of California was coming out, people said, well, that's great, these wines are really interesting, but we can't get them in the market, they'll never sell, you know, this is all just the fringe. And nearly everyone who said that, within a year their market was completely flooded with all these new wines. I was thinking, there's lots of opportunity for change, and change happens fast.
The keynote speaker, Jean Benet, did you make a comment on rosé?
I got through the entire day without talking about rosé.
Okay, let me give you a quote from Jean Benet. He wrote, "Not all pink wine needs to be summer water, but Whispering Angel should be cast into some Miltonian iteration of hell."
Yes.
And how was the reaction to that?
Well, I didn't hear from the Whispering Angel people, not surprisingly. you know, it's a wine that tends to divide people based on your view of the wine world, and the people who I guess I talked to more often were pretty happy and probably shared that view to begin with. But, you know, we all sit around drinking Bandol Rosé in the winter, so we're all kind of crazy. This new generation of winemakers has a completely different view of wine, and they're making hybrid Pet Nat. And we were saying, like, the, you know, one of the most allocated wines in New York right now is a hybrid Pet Nat from Quebec, which no one in a million years could have predicted.
Never. Never. The keynote speaker, Jean Benet. Okay. If this audience is heading for California to wine country, and there's a lot of wine country there, two do's, two don'ts.
Two do's. Make sure to go see a small winery where you actually have to make an appointment and it's not just walk into a tasting room.
Okay, that's one.
And I think, you know, find a place, either wherever city you're going, find a place that's got a really good local wine list and try to make some headway into it. Two don'ts. Don't go to a tasting room that you've heard of and you're three deep. And, you know, I say, especially if someone's coming down from here, don't just stick to the wines you know, because there's a lot of stuff that isn't in the market yet.
That's right.
That's extraordinary.
Yep. You have another book in you?
I do. I have another book in me. The trick is getting it out. Yeah, The New French Wine, which hopefully will be out next year.
Thank you so much, Jean Benet.
Hey, it's a pleasure.
The keynote speaker, Jean Benet.
This is Tasting Room Radio.
I hold in my hand King Cole, 2008, Washington State, and the man who conceived it, made it, Charles Smith, is once again on Tasting Room Radio. Hello.
Good to see you. I was looking forward to coming up here and seeing you.
So you brought out the King Cole. I know you love this, because that's the second time you've done that.
Really?
In Edmonton, you did the same thing. You love this wine.
Well, I just something that I don't make a whole lot of, and people don't really see it that often, and it's just kind of really distinct and kind of different, so it's like just kind of cool to share.
So it's a 55 Cab Sav, 45 Syrah, Stone Ridge Vineyards. Tell me about Stone Ridge.
It's this really isolated vineyard up in the northern part of central Washington. The man who planted it never saw it actually produce fruit. He had passed away. His son was farming it. It was laying on the ground when I found it in 2005.
Laying on the ground?
The vineyard, not the man, not the owner. And because they were not a farming family, not for grapes, and I had them prune the whole thing up. I took the whole vineyard, and the first year I made the wines. I made Hearts Gold Old Bones, and they got 97, 98, 99 points from Robert Parker, so I guess that was a pretty good find. And this is the same vineyard, and this was the first vintage I did the Cabernet Sauvignon Syrah co-ferment, and I really liked the wine.
I remember when I went through your cellar, one of the things that, there were a number of things that impressed me. One was that you were still sober, and two was, there was a beautiful bottle of Petrus that you had laying down. I think it was a big bottle, actually, at the time. I'm kind of wondering if you gave yourself an endpoint. If I could get to there with my wines, I'd be very happy. Or did you challenge yourself to do that?
Oh, I'm way beyond. Every year it's something new I'm just discovering. For example, this year I decided I'm going to change, put all my Rhone varietals in 500-liter punches. I'm abandoning barriques, and I just decided to do that overnight. I have my new Old Vine High Elevation Chardonnay project, and that was something new as well. I mean, so, you know, I mean, it's great to, you know, get great accolades and all that stuff, but it's also... it's even more exciting to do new things that not just about economics, but it's about, you know, keeping your passion going.
Are you doing any concrete?
Yes, I have big concrete
pools.
Big ones. I have big ones. I have some big concrete fermenters, and actually I have six new ones on the water coming from France as we speak for next harvest.
I always have to. This is Charles Smith, Cave Vintners, and Walla Walla, Washington. I need to get you to just give me a quick overview on Walla Walla and Washington itself. How are things down? Give us a state of the union.
Well, things in Walla Walla are great. I mean, you know, there's a lot of growth. I have my own vineyard coming on here, my high-end vineyard, Powerlines, coming on here in this harvest.
Powerlines?
Powerlines. It's based on the name of the road, but I think it was pretty cool. My vineyard's on a street called Powerline. And the other thing about it is there's just a lot of interest in Washington State nationally and internationally these days. I mean, pretty much, I think it's going to be on the cover of some newspaper soon. You know, the Californians are coming. The Californians are coming. Everybody's coming to Washington State because they realize we're slightly cooler climate than California, which is rather warm. We have long growing seasons, and we have a lot of land, and we have water, something that California can't really boast of. And therefore, we can make the wines like the ones we're tasting today. So that's what's going on in the Washington thing. The Washington thing is there's just a lot more really good wine being made.
Is Walla Walla tapped out, or is there still room to expand?
There's room to expand.
A lot of hills there.
A lot of hills. You know, water's the issue, but we get water. We have lots of groundwater. I mean, Walla Walla means water, water in the Native American Indian. So
who's your best customer?
My best customer? That's a good question. It might be Helsinki. You know, wine travels, right? So we're big in Tulsa, we're big in Helsinki, and of course we're really popular in Seattle. So
and Vancouver and Canada.
Apparently in Canada
and Alberta,
as well. Especially Alberta. We had a long history in Alberta. Apparently they really like us there. They actually really love us in Quebec as well. I guess I'll be there in 3 weeks and I'll find out how much.
Do we all like different varietals, different blends?
No, I think uniformly. I think Canadians, you know, have good taste in wine. They like to drink well. They like to eat well. And I think that they recognize a good wine is a good wine.
Well, I'm just thinking about, first of all, the fusion, the mixture of food on the West Coast here. We've got seafood, we have Asian, Korean, we have all
those.
No, it's
interesting. I think it's because, like, I make the Kung Fu Girl, and it's such a, you know, universally appealing wine. The wine's, you know, really minerally, real fresh, great to drink, and not, you know, super expensive. So I think that's a lot of ways people have access to my wines. And yeah. So therefore, you know, I would say that is really what, you know, is for a lot of people, that's how they found me. And then, you know, it's like pulling a thread on a yarn on a sweater. You know, you start pulling on it and you find the whole rest of the sweater.
Did you go walk the French section?
I did.
There's a lot.
And?
There's a lot of good.
Yeah, I tried a few things. A few folks pulled me aside, wanted me to try some stuff. And of course, France makes amazing wine.
Are you still on the bubble program?
The what?
The bubble program.
I am still on the bubble program. Right now, yeah, the 2013s have just arrived, and we're ready to rock.
Okay, here's your final opportunity, Tasting Room Radio, to announce to the world your next conquest. What's coming down the road we can watch for? Spill your guts.
High elevation, probably Old Vine Chardonnay, and probably some of the best ever produced in North America. Coming out August of this year.
August. Are you well?
I am fantastic. Look, I'm fit. I'm more fit than I normally am. Normally, I'm just drunk and fat. Now I'm just sober and...
Well, you're a dad now.
Yeah, I know. I got to clean up my act. Now I have to go.
What's your website?
CharlesSmithWines.com.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
Thank you. Love the hair. This is Tasting Room Radio, the 36th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Believe it or not, if you go to the Road 13 website, they already have listed their events for 2020. The dinners with Backyard Farm, the bubbles and crepes, cheesy weekend, crab boil, the bubbles and barbecue, the harvest barbecue, and the days that the wienery truck shows up. It's all there. Make your plans at road13vineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Whether you're a wine enthusiast or just getting acquainted with Unsworth Vineyards, you are invited to join the Unsworth Wine Club. Membership gives you exclusive access to their collection of limited production wines and many benefits throughout the year. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com.
I have a royalty in the room. This is the 41st annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. Gina Gallo is on my left. Jean-Charles Boisset is on my right. And they have joined me here at the table. How are you?
Great. No political meaning on that.
No, no, none of that.
I'm so happy to be back. Thanks for having us.
When was the first time you came here for the wine festival? Do you remember?
9 years ago. And then it was back-to-back for about 6 years. I fell in love with this festival. And then we had twins.
Yes.
So they're seven, so yeah. I kind of was off the grid a little bit.
Twins.
But now back.
One is called Cabernet, the other one Pinot Noir.
Twins are a life force onto themselves. How many times have you been here, Jason?
Oh, many times. You know, we met before together, 2006.
Yeah.
And obviously 2009, and cannot wait for the next years as well, because Canada, Vancouver is inspirational, exciting, and very importantly, aspirational. Look
kinda
at where
nice.
We are.
Kind of nice. Gina, I need to know about your health. How's your health?
My health?
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Wow.
Thumbs up. I'm, for all those that are listening, a cancer survivor. And I don't know if I would have made it through without my lovely husband, Jean-Charles. It's a journey. It's a big journey. And it's not anything you'd wish upon anyone you love, but at the same time, going through it, the individuals you meet, the support team, the doctors, and all of that, it's changed my world. And God gives us what we probably need at the time. And I think I was running crazily with work and wasn't focusing on some of the balance of life. So, not that I am, I still need the balance, but.
Were you able to hand off some of all of that work and just concentrate on it, or did you try to do both at the same time?
When I was going through it?
Yeah.
You know what? I stayed very involved in the winemaking, tasting, all of that, definitely, but I was not traveling. I could not give up. The one thing I will never be able to give up in my life is making wine.
Yeah, okay.
But it made us stronger together, and I saw Gina a lot more focused, very disciplined about the key priorities of life. So whoever goes through it, you need a very strong partner, and you need to be as a family fighting against that disease. But then you come out much stronger out of it than when you come into it. And that's the beauty of it, is that camaraderie, that fraternity, that friendship you build goes beyond just pure love and really surrounds you with a foundation which is second to none, Terry. So not to wish it to anyone.
No.
But we are better now than we've ever been before.
We're all surrounded by it. We're all touched by it. It's as simple as that. I just wanted to know. That's all. Well, what are you pouring?
I'm pouring a Signature Series lineup. We have a little Pinot Noir that we're pouring here. Also a Cabernet from Napa and a Chardonnay from Russian River. This wine, the Signature Series, is all about our family estate vineyards that we've evolved over the many years. Our family started in 1933,
yeah.
And this particular vineyard, my grandfather purchased in 1977 when Russian River wasn't an appellation. He grew confidence through his garden, and he grew confidence because this particular vineyard had Riesling and also Gravenstein apples. He didn't own it at the time. It was in the 60s and early 70s. I'm sure he was poaching, but he would pick those apples, take them home down in the Central Valley where I grew up, and my grandmother would make apple pie, and he would taste that apple pie and say, you know what? Focus, crisp. And Gravenstein, if you have not tasted it, it's a very focused, nice acid, you know, and the apple pie was nutmeg, cinnamon, spice, but not gooey, not sugary, because he didn't like that in Chardonnay. So that gave him the confidence one day to purchase it. He had the opportunity to in 77, and here we go. And still today, for me and our family estate vineyards that we grow, it's my favorite Chardonnay.
How personal is the Signature Series to you?
How personal? Diehard. Very personal.
Yeah.
I had someone that came up to our table today, and he brought up the estate, because we have the estate Chardonnay and Cabernet, and he remembers it, and he's like, please get it back. Please get it back here, because I haven't seen it in a while. And he described why he loved it, and I said, you made my day. You made my day.
Jean-Charles, where do we start with you? You have Raymond in front of you.
Indeed, and just to say, Terry, thank you. Gina makes one of the best Chardonnay ever made in California. Ever. And this is the wine of our first kiss. So it's very, very important to me as well.
That's my lovely husband.
You never forget your first French kiss either, right, Gina?
No, and it was a true French kiss.
So I learned where the French kiss is really now. Well, you know, Raymond is all about Napa Valley, of course, from Cabernet Sauvignon to Merlot to amazing Chardonnays and Sauvignon Blanc. Today you have a pure representation of what a Merlot can be in Napa Valley, in Santa Elena on the estates. Powerful, but a lot of beautiful, amazing fruits. And I'm a big fan of Merlot because, you know, I'm from Burgundy. I like soft, elegant, refined wines, long-lasting but very silky and velvety. So this one has all the velvet you want, including on the label. Terry, I know you like to touch. What about touching
it's
that
velvet.
Label?
It's velvet, of course. I went over and fondled it.
So ladies and gentlemen, black velvet label. This is your black tie. When you want to propose, when you want to celebrate, when you've made love and you want to relax, and before even doing so, you need your Merlot from Raymond.
Oh, my goodness. Girl. Oh, my goodness.
Who wound him up?
Vancouver. It's
Terry,
the place to be.
Looking at my wife is so exciting. We might as well go to the room now.
Oh, stop. Stop now. We could be napping. What else are you pouring over there?
So we're pouring the Napa Valley Cabernet as well, which is, you know, red velvet label as well, which is a Cabernet with a touch of Petit Verdot in it. And which is so interesting is we feel a very new trend in the heart of Napa. Wine made by two women. I'm a huge believer in feminine winemaking, of course. My wife is amazing, but Stephanie Putnam as well. And why do I bring it up is because it's wine with a lot of emotion, a lot of sensitivity, a lot of touch and elegance. Wine which is not about tannins, but it's about the power of the grapes.
Okay. You brought the LVE. And, you know, I'm a music guy. So,
of course.
So John Legend is partnered with you. How did this happen?
Well, we became friends. And John really wanted to make wine. As many phenomenal celebrities, we typically say no. But we became close friends. He really had genuine interest and knew how to make great wines, at least from a stylistic standpoint, which really inspires him on his harmonious music. So we made it together. We made 100% Napa Valley Cab, a Chardonnay, a red blend. And the wines are great, very successful. You could taste them on all his concerts. And I'm excited to tell you a little scoop. We're launching a rosé, but guess how? The only wine you're going to be able to bring in a concert, which will be in a can.
Okay.
And that's pretty cool because wants everybody to carry a wine in the concerts, and glass you cannot. So we are thrilled.
Oh, there's so many questions. All right, here's the thing. Does Gallo still do the 50-50 give back?
Yes, we do. So my grandfather started that. Every acre planted that is in vineyard, 1 acre stays in natural habitat. And that's part of our love for sustainability.
Let's talk about balance. You made a comment in a speech the other day. You don't do many speeches. And that is that, yes, we have new technology. We know how these vines are doing. We can tell, you know, this the whole digital world is upon us. But nothing beats a winemaker grower walking through the vineyards and knowing that piece of land every year for years and years and years. Nothing replaces that.
Nothing, Terry. I mean, my grandfather had a wonderful saying, your richest goods are the soil beneath your feet. And the best vineyards are the footprints of the farmer in that vineyard. And it's so true. You really have to know them like your children.
How many tasting rooms, Joan Charles?
15 in California and another 12 in France, in Burgundy and Beaujolais and the Rhone Valley.
And how many vodkas?
Well, we have three, made from Pinot and Chardonnay grapes, one which is infused with Beluga caviar from the southwest of France, and one which is infused with the bounty and beauty of the earth, black truffle.
And can you possibly tell us right now, in the last minute that we have, that you will never, ever, ever, ever make wine together?
Well, we love to make babies.
Oh, yeah. And you did so well.
And they're gorgeous and alive and very exciting. I think the beauty of Gina and I, we taste so many wines together that one day, I'm sure, we will dedicate a wine to our ladies.
Okay. I understand that. That makes
sense. I look
sense.
Forward to that.
God bless you.
Thank you, Terry.
God
thank
bless you, Terry.
To the love of wine and music.
Thank you, thank you.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Whether you're a wine enthusiast or just getting acquainted with Unsworth Vineyards, you were invited to join the Unsworth Wine Club. Membership gives you exclusive access to their collection of limited production wines and many benefits throughout the year. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com.